Namaste and welcome to the Chinnamasta Conversations, a part of the Mindful Maya podcast, in a conversation from the silence to the silence. In this episode, we have Emilia Joret, a filmmaker from Ecuador, currently based in Europe. She shares her experience as a filmmaker and how meditation helps her move on with life in general. She also shares her experience in participating in Maya meditation sessions in Tallinn, Estonia. And helping us record this episode is Otto Farm, another filmmaker, a friend from Finland. I met her here in, let's say you now. I met you here in BFM in Estonia. When did we meet, actually?
Good question.
2021, because that's when I arrived, and maybe the end of 2021 or something.
Probably. I don't remember the exact moment, but it had to be around that time.
Share with us, how does it feel to be working with this form of storytelling with cameras and lights? How does it work when there are other means and methods of storytelling as well? And even if there is no particular ideas like cinema or radio or anything, people still share their stories in one way or another. How do you feel this? How does it help you, I think?
So I started with photography, and I think the beauty of it is that it's so universal because you don't need to speak a certain language to see an image. So for me, it was always kind of like a passport to get into things that I was interested in, or for example, things that I wanted to explore. It was the best excuse to go there and be like, oh, I'm a photographer, can I stay here 2 months and, you know, just hang around? And it's kind of a... I would say it's a tool that helps you to open these places and open doors that you wouldn't have an excuse to be there normally. And then it evolved to cinematography, and which is kind of similar but very different at the same time, I think.
But how did you end up in Estonia? I mean, not end up, let's see, how did you...
Because I was doing photography for many years, for like 10 years, and I was doing a lot of documentary photography, and I wanted to start doing more moving image because I realized that photography was a bit limiting, so I wanted to add sound and movement to my stories. So I started to find ways to study filmmaking because I never studied it before. And then I applied to Viewfinder, and I don't know why they accepted me because I had no experience in filmmaking, just in photography. So that's why I went to these masters. And one of the cities was Estonia. So I didn't know anything about Estonia before.
And you just decided to stay here.
Yeah, I really liked it. Since I arrived, I really connected with the place, how calm it is. And I don't know how to describe it, but it kind of trapped me.
No, this is the same that happened to me. After my second semester was in Estonia with Kino Eyes Erasmus. I came here and then I saw it's more calm. And I like the weather, having come from almost equatorial region. And it's kind of... too hot sometimes.
Too hot, bit, really?
For me, at least. It in Kathmandu, it gets around 30, 32, something like that. That's too hot for me. And here, it was kind of okay. And I just thought it's a nice place overall.
What else did you like about Estonia?
Especially BFM. I had never heard sound in that way. Like, I was able to hear different frequencies of sound before inaccessible to me because of the equipment maybe, or because of the proper studio facility maybe. So this is also one of the reasons that I stayed here, to be able to understand these different frequencies of sound effortlessly. And to do that, I'd have to be here and learn more of these different sounds. And also because I'm using sound for meditation sessions and also to practice meditation myself. So it has opened up this new dimension, I'd say, of seeing the reality with sounds. So that kept me here until now, and I'm still here.
And with that knowledge, do you think you could apply it in other places, or do you need like this, like a specific kind of technical equipment to achieve that?
Yeah, it depends, actually. I mean, technical equipments are necessary to understand or actually feel this sound, like hearing a music, mm-hmm. hearing this and feeling this sound. For that, technical equipments are definitely needed. But when we like practice more and more with these equipments and understand how sound is working in general, then I think it's okay to work with lesser advanced equipment and still be able to understand that these frequencies are there, even though I'm not hearing it with these speakers, for example. Mm-hmm. But they are there, and how it would be easier for me to boost it or cut it and things like that. I think it would still make sense to have an access to a better studio to go and check back and forth. But it will still be helpful, I think, to understand.
And what else have you feel that you have learned here in your time in Estonia?
You know, it's contrary to popular belief about Estonia, especially people here, that they are very reserved and more and more silent. And it has been 2 years plus already for me here, and I haven't properly made any Estonian friends. So all my friends are either from America Latina, either from India, either from Egypt or Turkey, something like that. And the only people, Estonian people, I have in close are my colleagues in BFM. So outside of that, I don't have that. I don't have these circles of friends. But this is something at first I thought it wasn't good, or like, oh, this makes me feel lonely or something like that. But with time, I came to realize that this was actually helpful for me to understand this eternal aloneness that we all have. So back in Nepal, for example, if I go there, then I meet many people, and then we have conversations, everyone's inviting, and people are dancing. There's some fiestas, parties going, rituals, festivals. So many things are happening, right? And here it's another level. So it's more silent here. And like after day by day living in this silence, what starts happening is, previously, my focus, if it would go outwards, while I was in Nepal, for example, or even in Portugal, because there's a lot of things happening and people are inviting, everyone's talking with everyone, then my consciousness, my focus would go outwards. But here, it looks at itself and sees this difference, that here people are not looking at you or talking at you, and do I even exist or not? And this trickery in the mind, it's very, very interesting to watch. And it helps in understanding how the mind works as well. And also because this is what I'm more focused at in life in general. So it has helped me being here and seeing my own mind do this trickery around the situations. But I don't know about other people, how they feel about this this state, how the country is, how the people are here. Mm-hmm. But for me, it is more calm, and it allows me to watch more.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same, because coming from Latin America, you know how it is there. Mm. You know, so much people all the time, and noise, and everyone talking.
Yeah.
And here I do feel that it kind of forces you to go inside yourself. Mm. And I really like that. And I think subconsciously that's another reason why I was so attached to Estonia, because it gives you this chance of having even physical space for yourself. And, you know, in other places you have to, I don't know, have roommates, or, you know, it's physically not possible to have so much nature around you and so much silence.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe we need silence in our life. Like, there are stories of all these different masters, like Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or whoever we look at. They used to live in societies and communities for a while, and then they would go out and live somewhere where nobody can find them, in solace and in aloneness, and then again they come back. So I think this is what's happening here. Like, the last time I went back to Nepal, I was like surrounded by people, and then we would go to concerts or go to festivals, cultural festivals and jatras, and see like thousands of people going around a temple making like circles. It's like a pilgrimage or something. And then I come back here, and then again find this balance of differences. And so what happened is, quite interestingly, after living here for about 2.5 years, I went back to Nepal for a vacation. Then I saw the temples the monasteries or stupas in a different way that I never saw before, although I was born there and I was part of this day-to-day rituals that happens there all the time. And this time, I think the eyes changed and I was seeing it knowingly that it has something within me as well, because I was born there and I was being a part of that previously. But now it gave me this vantage point of appreciating what people have created around this and how the energy system is working in a way, not only this one small community, but there are many communities with their own practices, and they all are holding and keeping alive these different traditions. And it was very magical to witness that these small communities around are the energies that are keeping this whole thing alive, like a whole cultural thing alive. It's not only just in Nepal, for example. Then I was starting to think it's happening actually everywhere, that people are actively participating. And there's certain force behind that that's, I think, is the collective conscious that is giving this energy to keep these things alive. And this was such a witness for me towards that. So like I said, if I had never left the country, it wouldn't happen.
You would take it for granted, yeah, probably.
Yeah. And now it's because of this distance. Mm-hmm. It's more visible, the phenomenon is visible. Yeah, I think in that way, we are lucky to be away from our place and then go back and see and understand even more of that place, and also understand of ourselves, like what it does to be traveling, to be seeing.
To be moving so much. Yeah. But it's interesting because I feel like from an outsider perspective, you will think that Nepal is much more spiritual than Estonia. But it's funny that you had this... this opportunity in Estonia to become more, to work more on yourself, you know. No, especially because Estonia is like the country where they don't believe in God the most in the world. And I find it paradoxical that you kind of found this spirituality here instead of, you know, because the Western perspective is always like, oh, Nepal is so spiritual. And
Yeah. No, I've been told that before. That, you came from Nepal, you must, maybe this meditation and everything is culturally part of your, and you do this practice all the time. And I said, no, it is a dormant part of the culture for sure, because everyone's talking about it. Everyone says, everyone likes to claim that Buddha was born there. Everyone likes to claim that in the mountains, Shiva used to live and practice meditation and everything, and yoga and everything. And it is true that there are many yogis who were born there in the hills and Himalayas. And when we say Himalayas, I used to previously think Nepal. Mm-hmm. But now my thoughts have changed to see the Himalayas as this coordinates of the planet, where it can give you a such of scarcity for your own mind that the mind stops thinking. It happens quite a lot during trekking, for example. Like you walk from early morning till evening and find a place, I don't know, like 10 hours, 12 hours away in another village. And having walked so much without nothing, it calms down the mind. Like there's nothing to think. And
no oxygen.
if you go on the heights, yes, there's less oxygen. And you can see, for example, one this tall mountain, and all you have done is gone like a little bit away, and you are still seeing the same mountain. The whole day has passed. And then this, like, it's crazy. This may happen, but this does not only happen in the Himalayas. That's what I see. That can happen in any place where there is this sense of scarcity for the body and mind. Then it happens everywhere. And we like to say that this spirituality and everything being born there, in a way, they have documented this in Vedas and Upanishads. So it looks like more appealing that, maybe this is the thing from there and we don't have it here. But I think what happened in the Northern Hemisphere or the West is it got somehow lost or mixed with the traditions, and the local traditions got lost somehow. I don't believe that there were nobody here that didn't know, or that didn't meditate it, or that didn't look into the mind and body. There must be people everywhere doing this. Mm-hmm. Because this is the nature of human mind. And that's what I see.
But I guess also the scientific development made people think that whatever was scientifically proven was more valuable than something that you cannot prove with numbers or with facts.
Mm. But then I always think of this question, how can you quantify your internal blissful presence? It can't be done. Let's say you are very happy and maybe you are in a misery in life or financially or by home or anything. It may be very difficult for you. But if you are internally really okay with that and if you are finding it really nice to be living today, then we can't quantify that. I think that's where the science and measurement starts failing down.
Yeah, it hits a wall.
It hits a wall, yeah, for sure. So we've been doing, we've been having you for our meditation sessions from, I think, that's how we met maybe, or we met in some film sets, then we started with the meditation.
I think together. We met in a set before.
Yeah.
We met in that dance film that we made with Lou and...
With Lou.
You were making the sound and I did the photography. It was here actually.
Yeah, studio. In the black box.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time now that I think about it.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you feel about these weekly meditation sessions?
Honestly, for me, it's been one of the greatest gifts of being in Estonia because I felt it really kind of grounded me. And I always been interested in meditation, but I think it's so much stronger to have like a community and people to talk about it, because it can be a very lonely process if you do it on your own. And you know, I mean, I think it's a tool that you can take everywhere, but if you can share it with people that know about it, and I've learned so much from you as well. I really like that I can ask you so many crazy questions and it won't be crazy for you and you have the answers, which I'm super grateful for. And I felt like in the most difficult times that I had in Estonia, thanks to those sessions, it was super kind of easy to deal with it. Not easy, but you know, it
was helpful in a way.
Yeah, it was, I could see them with different eyes and from a different perspective. And I guess I didn't take those problems as seriously, or I didn't let them affect me as they could have.
You know, you just said similarly in our first episode, there was one musician from Nepal and he remembered something that I told him a few years back. And he said, you know, I remember that one day you told me we must take rather a multidimensional take to the situations. And I was like, when did I say that?
He didn't even remember.
I don't even remember saying that. But then he remembered that and he said it was helping him a lot. But that's what I do as well. Like when I'm in situations, I try to see it in different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Like very basically saying, I would try to, even if I don't know how you would be feeling, I try to think like maybe for you, it may be like this. So maybe this situation has become like this. That thinking may not be true. Like you may be feeling something different, totally different than what I'm assuming. But me trying to think in this way that maybe this person was feeling, maybe he has some problems or feeling something on his own. Maybe there is something going on in his life, and trying to bring this calmness to myself, it helps a lot. It does not matter what the other person is actually in reality thinking, but it helps me as an individual. And I think that's the whole primary idea of looking into the world and world of karma according to all these practices. But for me also, it's really good to be doing this like weekly sessions and being around people who are practicing. So it allows me to also become more silent. And we've been in sessions where we didn't talk anything and we just sit in silence. I think those are my best sessions.
Why?
Because then there's more room for all of us to like actually look inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm guiding the session, for example, what happens is words are being spoken. And each word has a different experience for you, different meaning for you. And the mind of a listener starts to go behind the meanings. And if that happens, then it's difficult to go into the meditation. But having said that, if somebody comes there and then sees nothing is being done, then it doesn't work. So something has to be said.
Mm-hmm.
And my approach had been, I would say something, and then again, the next time I would say a little bit differently, and other time a little bit differently. But to finally bring the listener to this session where we would not have to say anything, I think the whole idea of talking is to bring to this point where you're relaxed and just be there and keep on watching the mind. I think that is most important.
Going beyond language as well.
Yeah.
Getting trapped in the concepts.
Talking about going beyond the languages, I shared the same technique I was giving you and our other friends.
Mm-hmm.
I shared this technique in the ashram with my friends there. And their thoughts on it was more profound than what I had seen. Because this, they called it a definitive door
mm-hmm.
or definitive key for the body. And he could connect where this technique could lead or in which different part of the world, some different religion, how this experience can be translated into different like thoughts and communications. And I was surprised and I was just listening to him talking about this. One important thing he said is, so it's a door and you know that you are going to go, you are going to enter, that's for sure, though it arrives unexpectedly. So we know, we expect to go in and we know we will go in. But when we go in, it happens unexpectedly that we're lost, we're gone. And how did you feel like for this?
I think it was one of the strongest we had. I mean, I wouldn't recommend someone that is just starting to go to that one, because I think it can be scary.
Mm.
Especially because you feel you can lose consciousness and kind of like this attachment that we have to ourselves and our ego and to let go. But yeah, it was very strong for me. I felt very, very good after. And I wasn't afraid because you were there and two other friends. So for me, it was like in a safe space. And I guess you have to do it with people that you really trust and that, you know, they will catch you if you if you fall.
That's what we did in Nepal. Every time I do this, I fall. And these guys were immediately holding me. And the immediate sensation was I couldn't identify them. But I saw two beings were holding me. But there was no language to interpret that. Like, for example, if I'm holding the cup right now, there's a language
mm-hmm.
that immediately comes to the mind and it says it's a cup that I'm holding. Even though if we don't think that way, it knows. But there was no knowing but seeing that I was being held. And later when I came back, somehow I remembered them holding me. But just this one moment, them holding me. But after that, nothing else.
Were you afraid?
No. I have done this many times. And with this, the fear of entering into that door is no more there. What happens is more I enter, the more now I can see. In the first few times I would enter and I would come back and I would not know what happened. It was too fast, I forget. But now I can see through this process and like it's a phase, like a shadow phase that comes in, like an eclipse that comes in and leaves. And that one tiny moment in the between is where things, we can learn a lot of things in that thing, I think. One thing that have surprised me is you never fail.
I know, I never passed out, not even once in my whole life.
Mm.
So I always been super conscious of everything that happened when I was thinking I was awake.
So I don't know how it works. I just know the key, but I don't know the whole mechanism of the door and everything. And then I was seeing you do this and somehow you had the control, or I don't know if it's the being inside you that has the control, the balance of the body. But what I could see was you had this total balance that I knew you were gone, but somehow the body was in total balance there. I can't do that. Like, if I'm gone, I lose the body.
I guess it was my higher self taking care of me. Like, what is she doing now? Let's keep her alive.
The only danger is that you may fall and hurt yourself, but you definitely come back. It's the mechanism is like that. I did send you a picture about this. Yeah. This was actually my friend after this day we did this. And next day he sent me two pictures of one, a monk or a yogi is just falling or in the moment act of falling. He's not completely on the ground. On the next one, there are two, the fallen one and the one that is watching. And that is so beautiful because you can see when we fall, the fallen is gone, but this one who is there always watching is watching you. And when you come back, the one who is watching you kind of stays in the back, and then our identity and everything comes back.
But don't you think the one that is always watching is the subconscious in a way, that is always present, kind of aware of everything? That
I do think it's the subconscious that's constantly watching, and because the subconscious is way more powerful than our conscious thoughts and conscious mind and conscious activities. And the subconscious knows exactly like what's going to happen or what needs to be done. It knows in a way from really a higher vantage point, from a higher perspective than our mind. My subconscious knows more than that. It has an access to beyond time, beyond the perception of time. So it knows past, present, future, and it knows, it can see, and it can connect all of these different meetings, all of these different crazy experiments we're doing, and it knows. And
all I think the possibilities that could happen.
No, it definitely knows. Otherwise, it wouldn't bring these people together who will collectively do this. So it's taking care of everything and allowing us to explore and learn by ourselves at the same time. So, in a way, my subconscious and your subconscious and Otto's subconscious, for example, is not different. They know they can communicate with each other. And there's this thing that shifts, keeps on shifting between the subconscious and the conscious. And when we come to the conscious, then we start having stories. And that is what defines us, our language, our way of acting, perceiving, understanding. I think everything is a story, that's why. Somehow I think even subconscious is a story. Maybe it's a grand story, a bigger story than we can ever imagine. But I think that's a story as well.
Who's a story?
I'm not sure. That's mysticism. Mysticism 101. I really don't know whose story. But as far as there is knowing, somehow I have this thought in the back, like a... I have this hintergedanke in my head that says, you know, subconscious is also a story. So there should be something.
But if it's a story, it should be a story from someone or something else, no?
It should come. Because it is a collective story, though. Like the way subconscious functions, the way mind is working, it's a very delicate thing. And the mechanism of the mind, like we discuss in the sessions, is the same, right? It works the same way for you, for me, for him, for everybody. And on the top of that, stories are changing. So stories affect us. Some stories affect positively. Maybe the same story affects someone else negatively, but the act of affecting is the same. So if some story affects me negatively, and that feeling of being affected negatively is the same, maybe various degree of feeling misery, maybe a little misery, or even like more misery, or a grave danger misery, but the mechanism is same with everything. And what I think is this being same of the mechanism of everything is still a story.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel.
Like a common...
Yeah, it's a common story, but it still somehow is a story. Actually, my whole journey started with this question, who is in control? Like, I could see, like, obviously the governments are not in control. what do you call this word? What theory they call it?
Oof. For what?
It's like weird theories, unproven things, and weird facts. Conspiracy theories.
Conspiracy theories, yes.
Yeah, I mean, my question was, first, who am I? And I couldn't find the answer to that. In my home, if I go now also, there is this three small sticky papers, and one of them is like, Mo ko hun, who am I? And another one is ko hun, who am? And the third is who, just am. And so like put there, and now I understand it was the subconscious trying to show you the patterns of how this can be decoded. And then I don't know. After that, I don't know.
After all this time.
After all this time. But I feel this constant seeing that is there. And that is where I have kind of concluded, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe somebody someday will know more and then add up to this, or like destroy this idea. But this constant knower is now, I think, is present in everyone. And still this I can't be known, but the presence of the knower can be known. And I think that's where the question itself is no more relevant. However, it was very relevant to start with, but then it doesn't become relevant anymore. And this has showed that the mind actually is working in the same way for everybody. I don't know, sometimes I think it really doesn't matter as well.
Why?
Because we can see people who are seekers or who are looking for meanings and broader meanings or deeper meanings to life. And there are people who are not looking anything at all. And they're okay. They live their life normally, quite all right. And there are people who are looking into this mystical stuff. And that's also quite all right. And then I see that in a way that the universe is quite all right with everything. Like, okay, you want to do this? Go do this. You want to look into the mysteries of the universe?
Okay,
let's go do this. You want to know the unconscious? Here you go, the key. That's why it's good. It has been really blissful for me as well to find this group here. And even though we are doing this in a small circles, it's quite all right and it's nicer. And at first I used to think like, the world should meditate or everyone should meditate. It's such a good thing. And then my master said to me, nah, you know, it's just beginning. And at some point you will stop thinking about the world should meditate and you will just do it alone. And it will become more easy and much more fun when you do it alone. And then when I was coming here, it was fresh, you know, I had freshly learned all these techniques and I was the first time in Europe and I was like, yeah, I need to share this thing.
And nobody was listening.
And nobody was coming.
No one cares.
Nobody cared, exactly. Yeah, but with time, I also meditated myself with these sessions. And with time, now what I feel is when there are less people, I find it more easier and then to share this to everyone, like in a big group. If there is a small group, then there's more chance that we all can all be silent more and see more about ourselves.
And why do you think there's this lack of curiosity? Because for me, it's always been there, so I don't understand how someone cannot be curious about something that for me is so fundamental.
I don't know either. I think it's it's another mysticism 101 thing. Yeah, some people are curious about life and these things, and for some it doesn't ring any bell for them. Even if they hear it, it doesn't make any sense, or there's no curiosity about it. And again, it's not a negative thing, or it's not saying, like we're the ones practicing and we're good and they're bad.
Yeah,
it's
not like that. I guess it's just like any other thing that you're interested in.
Yeah.
Or not, like.
Yeah.
I don't know, we like filmmaking. Some other people don't
find
it interesting at all.
Yeah. But what I've come in terms with myself and to understand is that actually that also is part of what's happening at the moment. It does not mean that everybody should, like, you know, hard-headedly focus and start meditating. It doesn't need to be like that.
But don't you think it would solve a lot of problems? Like, I don't know, if you look at the world, there's so much aggression and so much self-hatred and all of these things, I think. Even wars, I think they come from a deeper place of violence.
Yeah.
That is maybe because it's not addressed and we're always looking outside and, you know, always finding enemies or, you know, creating borders or instead of...
No, this is difficult because there are two ways of seeing. One, we can see from the collective conscious eyes, or there's a group mind within us. Even if we're individual, there is a group mind, and how this group mind affects us is different than how the individual mind affects us. So if our mind, if our life is mostly guided by the group mind, then it is really difficult for this kind of person to come back and understand how it can actually be changed or how the world can be made much more better place. But ironically, the group mind talks about it. There needs to be non-violence, world should be peaceful and filled with love.
Not peaceful inside of ourselves, yeah. So how can we expect to...
So this is coming from the group mind, because group mind is never satisfied at all. It can never be satisfied. It always needs something. It needs what we call masala. It needs some masala in life, so it's looking for that everywhere. That's how the group mind is working. And also because it is a group, and more than one person is already a group. And then I would have an idea of certain something, and you would have a little bit slightly different idea of the same thing, and we would already start clashing here. And if and when both of the individual, for example, would understand that this is the phenomenon, that I am thinking in certain way to the same thing, the same coffee we're drinking, and for you the taste may be different, and I should be okay with that. Like I should see that that exists. You know, I should see that the way you are perceiving the same thing, and which is true and feels valid to you, is should be okay for me. And that's how we can start realizing the individual mind.
As long as it doesn't affect someone else.
Yeah, yeah. Like it can be however you are thinking, whatever the thought process is happening within you around something. If that would be like shouldn't exist in the world, or that is a false thing that shouldn't exist everywhere. And if it didn't exist, then we would not know about it. We would never know about it. It wouldn't affect us at all. But since it exists and it is there, then we should see that it is there. But if we see this as a group mind, then this is like, you're then now attacking my group or my group's belief, my group's faith.
Or my country.
Yeah.
Anything.
But that's why it's a difficult, that's why meditation is very, very individual thing. That we should individually see this phenomenon of how it is working and understand our own phenomenon of how my mind is working around things. Then that gradually brings more and more peace to that individual again. It's not going to happen to the whole world, but that individual will become more and more peaceful.
Our own dark side,
yeah.
I guess, if we make it conscious.
Yeah.
It's easier to also understand others instead of projecting our own.
Yeah, and then once we start seeing our own dark side and our own way our mind is working, then we basically understand this is how the mind works and this is how everyone's mind working. So the complaints that I would have otherwise, these complaints would go away. But this will not happen in a group mind. That's the most difficult thing. And even though my first thoughts after coming out of ashram was everybody in the world should meditate, then now I don't think that way. I know that it's impossible for everybody to meditate because of the group mindset, and only the individual mind can realize. But a group effort can be done, like group setting for meditation. Everyone with similar ideas can come together and start meditating. Even if it's a group thing, it's still an individual thing that everyone's watching themselves. But we can use group mind in that way. But the whole world can't be.
We need too many lives.
Yeah, we need too many lives for that. I think I'm done with this life. I mean, in a good way, like, I'm satisfied with my life.
And how did you decide to start sharing this knowledge?
Okay, that's another thing, that when you start seeing and when you see that it can be helpful if you share, then you start sharing. This is your internal call. You should. There's no other way. That's Mahayana Buddhism. Once you start knowing and once you see that it gives you bliss, and the way in spirituality is if something gives you bliss and internal peace, that is the right way. If something does not give, that's the wrong way. It's all within you. It's built system with Faras. It's inbuilt.
Mm-hmm. So inbuilt knowledge.
Inbuilt knowledge. If you don't feel good, you feel bad. And if you feel bad, you naturally we try to avoid these things that makes us feel bad, right? So in the spiritual practice and meditation practices and yoga and everything, that if something has changed you and helped you see something in a better way and appreciate and made your life much easier and much more calm, then you share it. And when you share it, the more it comes to you. So the more you share, the more you learn, and the more you meditate, the more you learn more and more about yourself. So it can only go on like growing,
expanding.
Yeah. So it's the same for you as well. If this has helped you and if this has helped you find this relaxation in life, then I think it's good that you start sharing. Because if you don't share, you never practice. And then when you have to share, then you have to practice. And
true,
then it
but
helps
I
you
feel
more.
I don't know enough to kind of teach, you know.
Well, I think you know pretty well. I think you know.
I just need to.
You just need to do it. You can start with like a small group and organize small sessions. And You know what I do? I go all spontaneous in every session, actually, because I don't know what needs to be done. There is no like hard and fast rules that, okay, rule number one, this, rule number two, this. There is nothing like that. And we can change the experience however we want. So you can do the same. You can be spontaneous, but knowing that the core idea is to witness ourselves, witness what the mind does. The talking of the mind, if the mind is moving everywhere, we're just watching there and watching it. So around that core idea, you can build anything. Maybe a running can help, like run inside a meditation room, like, and see what happens. You know, different experiments. You can do anything. I think if you have found this thing that doesn't move inside you and everything's moving around you, then you have found it and you can start sharing it. That's the idea of Mahayana Buddhism. There's a beautiful story that says that when Buddha became Buddha, then he was, well, basically he got liberated from birth and life cycle. And then there were deities and gods from heavens and giving like a flower rain on him. Then they would ask him to, now you have found it, you have known, you have been liberated, and we would like you to surpass the, even like beyond heaven and everything. So you are free to go. So they opened the doors and everything for him. And then he said, no, until the last person of the planet. So he's like, I'm going to be a doorkeeper here, and I'll see, make sure that every last person of the planet will pass this door, then I will come. So that's like the basic idea, starting idea of Mahayana Buddhism, which is the great vessel, Mahayana. So the great vessel of life. And that, it's just a really beautiful story. But that aspect of this Buddha is always already within all of us. So when you know, and when you know and see that it gives you bliss, then you share it. That's actually the idea of this thing. And I think you can do it. I've seen your energy. It's really good. You can share this. And still I'm surprised with that you wouldn't fall. That was something very powerful. And I'm there like ready when you fall, like we all are ready to hold. But you're not falling. And then I'm like, what? This is strange. How is this possible? It's some higher consciousness allowing you to somehow be in my legs. While you are experiencing and gone, the body is controlling like this. This is really, really beautiful.
Yeah. Also, something that I enjoyed a lot was the past life regression. Until now, I feel it's really helping me to see everything in such a different light, like even my relationships with other people and this thing that we were talking about, this play that we're always like kind of acting in a way, like, and all these masks that we have for each person. Yeah. After the session, it became so clear, like, in a beautiful way. Like, I feel it really kind of gave me a different perspective of...
No, this, when this thing came to my life, I was shocked and surprised that how powerful it can be. And I wanted to learn all the time, like, oh, I need to learn this thing. This thing's very powerful. And then I learned. And then I started sharing, and I see with each person or with each friend that I'm doing this, I myself am learning more of how the subconscious is working, or how I could guide the session to make it more fruitful, bring out more information that helps the person going under hypnosis. And I learn with each session while we were doing for you. And so I didn't know at first how to do or what to start with. Then usually the cloud method works. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work for you. I was like, what? What do I do now?
That's happening.
We're already on the induction and you don't see any clouds. Then I found a way. It worked. So we went with that way, and then it was like you went in there. I could see you went in, so like, okay, thank God it worked. Then I later realized a lot about why people are how they are at this point in time. And we could also see, and again, it's a symbolic thing, like, right? Like, it's not like that is exactly what happened. It's very symbolic because subconscious does... it never shows us exactly what happened, because exactly what happened is an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it
was a pattern of it's a pattern. It's a long, lengthy pattern. Anything can happen in that pattern, right? So, but the symbols, what happened, what we saw, and how it affects our life today, that is important there. Because even if it didn't happen, even if we didn't go to past life, what the mind is showing you is important. And that is what we are continuously watching. Maybe it was the past life, we don't know. Maybe it's a future, we don't know that either. But what it is showing, and if it's helping you, and if we can find a way to know and understand what was being shown and how it is affecting my current situation in life, then that is the most beautiful thing. And I think it happened.
Yeah, and it was so powerful to me, because I've tried many different type of therapies before, and I never was happy with them. I always felt that I ended up giving therapy to the therapist, or, you know, I never felt like good after the sessions. And with this, was completely different. It was so profound. It took me like a few days to kind of come back to real life. And yeah, I'm constantly thinking about it and trying to apply it, and especially the advices that my subconscious gave me, that in a way are so simple, but you know, you really have to. I guess if I wasn't conscious of them, I wouldn't be working on that. So
yeah,
that was amazing. I'm so grateful for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no, I'm also very grateful.
And I can't believe it was like 5 hours. I felt like it was like half an hour or something.
It's a normal, so normal that when I ask after the session, there's like maybe 15 minutes. Oh, you're gone for 2 hours.
Yeah, honestly, it felt like so fast.
Yeah. The thing with the subconscious is, and you were conscious all the time seeing this, right? So with the subconscious, what's happening is it gives the conscious part of the mind, and then the conscious part of the mind starts analyzing. So the first criteria was, don't analyze. As much as possible, the first thing you see, you share, you talk about it. Then that the whole thing is practice for the mind. The first part is just practicing for the mind to speak the first thing we see, so that the conscious mind finds relaxed, and then it says, okay, I will be a little silent about it. Then when we actually start, let the subconscious talk, which somehow uses the conscious mind to speak. It's collaborating with the conscious mind, and the conscious mind is using this speech system to talk.
Deliver the message.
But in the same way, your conscious mind and subconscious mind collaborated together to bring out the message. And you were allowing it to happen. So I think a person needs to be ready. Like, no one can force you to be on that, on hypnosis, or bring you back. It's not a forced session. You need to be willingly going there. You need to be allowing yourself to take this route and see what it does. Maybe I'll just take a look and see. And this allowing actually is, I think that's what helping. I mean, there are some friends here who says, you know, my girlfriend really needs this session.
Not me, just her.
Yeah. And then like, okay, but it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
she needs to want it. She needs to have, the call needs to be for her.
Yeah, and who are you to say that someone else needs
and it? I was like, no, I'd really love to, but only when she wants to do it. You can't, like, nobody can force it.
To, yeah.
Because it doesn't work, you know, because then the person will start thinking, this is all rubbish that I'm saying. It's what am I doing here? Look at this, like a puppetry show. But if the person is willing, then the whole alchemy is different.
Mm-hmm.
The process is different.
And you were also saying that the subconscious is kind of protecting you, right? Like in the sense that it wouldn't show you something too painful that you are not able to process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're not ready yet to deal with it.
Yeah, and for example, the first hypnosis session, if you are not ready to see something, then, or you wouldn't understand, then it wouldn't show you those information. And maybe this first session was very powerful, and then you saw a lot of things there. Then what happens is you are ready to receive more. Then at some point it organizes this whole setting again, and then it shows you more and more about this, about different things. Or it allows you to receive these things in even in dreams or even in meditation, like when you are sitting there for meditation, then also it starts showing you things. So without first making sure that the conscious mind cannot handle, it will never give anything, because it is very, very compassionate, and its job, the basic job, the one thing that he has it has to do is to protect us. It's trying to do everything too.
But also, I guess, to teach you some lessons, right? Because I remember you were telling me in some patients when they were telling you like, oh, we did this because this person needed to be sick to kind of realize this or to learn this.
We definitely need to have patience with the subconscious, because it does not know right from wrong. Or let's say in the existential reality, there is no right or wrong. There is the incident, and the conscious mind brings the incident into different narratives. That's a different topic again. So there can be only incident, and this whatever incident will help you eventually, the subconscious will do that. So there have been some of the friends in some of hypnosis sessions that then I ask, why did this happen? And like, they needed to rest, and he was not listening at all. So we needed him to listen. So there may be sometimes accidents in life that we don't understand, but it's the like bigger part of life taking play and trying to show us something that we should be doing, or something that would help us in the long run. So it's always showing us that. And with these sessions, it's possible to see these patterns, like, okay, what should I be doing? How should I be approaching my life? So
I change to?
Yeah, it shows. And sometimes it shows in a very strange way. For me, it happened that after graduation, so they gave me two options. One option was go back to Nepal and continue with films and continue with meditation there. All right, no problem. The second option is you stay in Europe and you will have problems. We can't say what the problems are, but you will face serious problems. Then it will start becoming good for you. And I thought, okay, let's see how I can stay here. And then the few days after that, the university called me and says, there's a vacancy here. Do you want to do you want to teach here? And I was like, okay, so this is how you want me to stay here. Okay, let's do this. And I think by that time, we already had access to this Hector Hotel, doing meditation there. Yeah, we already had. And then I wrote to the Hector Hotel and said, I graduated and now I'm going back to Nepal for a month. But I want to be back and I want to continue the sessions. And two of them replied with the same similar name. I think it was Lizanna and Lizianna. Two people with the same name, similar name. And they replied and they said, one of them replied and said, sure, we would love to continue the sessions. Have you continued the sessions? And the another one said, yeah, actually, we were thinking about you to let you continue.
So like, all the doors were opening.
And that was open. Yeah. And then I started working here. Then I had a visa problem. And I was like, what? So this is the problem.
This is.
And then I had to leave the country for a month. And it was not for a month. It was for 4 months.
To Portugal, I remember, right? Yeah. You were trapped there.
I was completely trapped there. I couldn't exit. And my visa was not working. The residency situation wasn't working. The visa wasn't working. So I basically had to wait there. And I had lots and lots of time of waiting. And what happened is all the dark shadows that were not resolved, or I never saw them, or I did not address them before, they started showing up, because I was already in this pit hole, a dark spot with complete uncertainty. I could leave Portugal, go back to Nepal, but then I wouldn't be able to come back. So if I went,
you would have lost the chance.
I would have lost everything that was given here.
Mm.
So I decided to stay. And then they said, okay, we'll provide you place. Here's the place. You can stay here as long as you want. Then I was like, okay, living place solved. Now, what am I going
to
do?
What to eat?
No, eating was quite all right, because I was still getting around 400 per month.
So you could
because I was teaching online still, and that was like for food it was okay. I didn't have to pay for accommodation, but for food yes we were paying. That was done. But every day I was thinking more and more, like waiting for the documents and what am I doing here? It's like, I don't want to be here. I have to go back there. I have obligations in the university to teach. And all of these started bringing out really dark memories and dark thoughts. I was surprised and I thought I was a practitioner of meditation. How did this happen?
Where was all of this?
Suddenly, what's happening to my life? It was a very dark moment. And to the point that sometimes I was having these suicidal thoughts. And then I was like, this is strange. Because every time I was seeing a metro pass, I could see in a scenario in the mind that I jumped and the metro hits me and I'm dead. It was very vivid and I could see that it could happen. But I didn't jump. I was just watching and seeing that this is strange. This never happened to me before. So everything that could potentially kill me was coming in my mind again and again. I was like, something is going on in here. Then I discovered that writing helps. Because then what I did was, okay, I wake up in the morning, super down mood, super bad thoughts. And I start writing everything, whatever thoughts coming. Every sentence of the thought is on the book, notebook. Then each evening I'm reading it aloud in the park. And I visited all the parks this time, like when I was there. So each time, sometimes somewhere in the park, sometimes some other park, I'm sitting there, I'm reading everything again and again. And by the end, it kind of became like a film script, the whole thing. And the different ways that I thought I could die, I kept it all on that script and killed the character in every possible way. Then the last day I was reading and I finished everything, writing everything done, and I was reading it loud. Then I finished everything and I was crying because I could see that thing within me that was suffering was dying. And that change needed to be there. It would be really difficult for this change, but I needed to go really down, deep down, dark, and see it and let it go by any means. And this was when I killed it or killed the character. The next day was so light. It felt so nice, felt so good. And somehow my friend Nova, no, I had never told him that I was doing meditation sessions. And he found out somehow and said, you were doing meditation sessions in Tallinn? Yes, I was.
And you never told me?
You never told me? It's been 3 months that we stayed together. You never told me about this. Like, I didn't see the need. And then he says, no, you shouldn't do that. Now let's do this. We will organize meditation sessions. You will start doing this again. And because you know this, you need to do this. And he and another friend from Nepal, she's now in Kinoise 9, and one another friend from Lusofona in Portugal, they somehow teamed up and they were like helping me with everything. And I was like, what's happening? I decided not to meditate for this whole time. Then the universe is pushing me now. The day I like finished this and killed myself and now everything is pushing to do it again. It was really funny.
But why did you decide to stop? Don't you think when you're having such a hard time, should be the opposite where when you start to meditate more?
No,
to...
for me, before the idea of meditation was sit there and close your eyes and watch your breath, for example. And after this situation, I realized meditation can be more than just sitting and closing eyes. And even though if I was talking about it previously, I had this experience that whenever I was writing down my thoughts, that was also going on, like a mantra was going on constantly. It was being written and I was reading it aloud again and again and again. So it was like a ritual for me. And this ritual and the sacrifice, because I killed myself in the story, and this was not just metaphorically on the story, something was dying inside me. That's why I was suffering a lot. So this was happening. Then when everything it was cleared and like I closed the story and I cried a lot and then closed down everything and the next day I felt better. Then I started noticing that actually the whole thing was like a big meditation test that happened, and somehow I was able to go through this and not get caught by what they call Mara in Buddhism. That there will be thoughts and entities that will come and then try to haunt you and try to bring you down, and they will do anything in their power to bring you down. And I was experiencing this these archetypal energies that were trying to bring me down.
But do you think it was something external or more a part of your own ego that was manifested?
No, a part of own ego. It's not. It's never external. I mean, external are can only be
metaphor.
Yeah, external can be symbols. But let's say if I have a very negative feeling today, everything around me will turn negative for me, right? So when I'm having all the darkness inside me, everything around me becomes dark. That I knew that, but I was still also being suffering. Knowing that these are all the manifestations of my internal thoughts, it was still painful and suffering. But it worked out well. And when it worked out well, I got the residency card finally arrived.
After once waiting he didn't 4 care months. Anymore.
Yeah, once he was like, yeah, okay, I'm fine. Portugal, fine. Okay, I'll stay here. Then the residence card arrived, and it arrived for 3 more years. And I was like, what? How does this happen? So things started working out. Then I remembered the subconscious did tell me about this, but it didn't tell me how it will happen. Because it told me exactly what would happen, then I wouldn't care much. Then I would say, I'll just go through that. And I wouldn't learn. But it did tell me that something will happen. Something bad for you will happen. But it will be okay. Then I forgot that part, that it will be okay. And I was suffering all the time and forgetting that it will be okay. But when it was okay, I thought, damn, you were right.
I passed the test.
Yeah. And I think everyone needs to go through this deep shadow work in the life. I think it's part of everybody. Yeah. I think I just shared a very weird story. Shadow work story.
No, thanks for sharing. I know it's not easy to share these very personal, difficult thoughts.
And no, it was really helpful. I discovered a method as well. Like when we really write, it releases a lot of things within us. It really helps us. And I'm really grateful for the people I meet. During this time of really low energy for me in Lisbon. And they helped me, even though I may have been a little bit bad or negative at some point. And sometimes I felt really bad for their actions. But later I realized it was all on purpose. Like it was all manifesting exactly how it should to affect my internal being more and more.
What do you mean? In what way there? You felt bad about their actions? Like you felt bad that you were not the best version of yourself?
That also, yeah. Like I would curse myself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look around people and then and see I'm not the right one. I'm not, I don't fit. And I don't know what to do. People seems like everyone knows what to do, but I really don't know what to do. And I didn't know. I still don't know what to do, actually. But that was affecting me. And there were people I met to whom some of them I shared a little bit of my story, and then I thought maybe they will judge me, or maybe I shouldn't have shared this and then it would bring me down again. So everything I did was like hitting me more and more and more and bringing me down more and more. But later I realized meeting them was on purpose. I needed to meet them. I don't know how they look at me at the moment, but right now it doesn't matter at all, because when I needed to meet them, when I needed to experience these conversations and meetings with them, that needed to happen, and it helped me go down this dark path. And later I thought, wow, angels show up in a weird weird ways. Someday God shows up in one person and then does something, another person, another doing something, but all of them trying to. Maybe it was like a contract of the subconscious that, okay, now this time you go there and meet with this person, and then you share these things, then go there, and then we'll just try to hammer him more and more.
Some karmic contracts from before.
Some karmic contracts, definitely. And then at the end, everything worked out. It was crazy. And this is what we all have to go through one way or another. finding this this internal relaxation isn't as easy as we can say it is easy. It can be easy, but there will be these rides, ups and downs of waves. And we tend to forget pretty fast that it's actually just the waves and it will go up. But
that is impermanent. And
yeah, keeps on changing. I heard this in a South Park episode. You know South Park episode? I think Kyle was the one who says, you know what I learned today? The only thing that doesn't change is the change itself. Wow, this is...
It's a profound in South Park.
It is a strong statement. Yeah, so how do you feel going to for another interview in Portugal for your PhD?
Again, the same. I feel this... The fact that I've been able to live in so many countries also made me realize this impermanence, you know, in relationships, in people, in places. It's not easy because you usually get attached to persons or places or things, but I think it's beautiful also to be aware of it and to accept it. And
definitely. After having lived here for quite some years, and now it's a new start in a new place.
Yeah, now I feel it's like my comfort zone, Estonia. Who would have thought that? You know, I didn't even know where it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
No, I knew where it was, but I didn't know much about the country. But I feel very grateful to be able to move around. And I think we're very privileged to be able to work in film and go to so many amazing places. And
with my travels, something I've noticed is the whole world is actually our ashram. The basic meaning is ashram. It's asraya, where you can take, not refuse, but it's similar, but it's not refuse. Because refuse is somehow in between positive, negative meanings. But this is to find a place where you can rest. And wherever I've been, I've seen, okay, the whole world is actually this place where we can move around and rest. I remember one Baul, mystic singer from Kolkata. She was a very calm woman. She didn't speak much. And one evening we had to sleep under broken roofs and water was leaking. And we were on a musical tour in Kolkata. Then my friends were complaining. And I was just watching, okay, this could be interesting. And she said in Hindi, "Kabhi chhat ke niche kabhi aasman ke niche," which means sometimes under roof, sometimes under sky. And that was all she said. And it hit me really hard. I still remember. And I see the roof keeps on changing, but this movement is constant. And for you, your comfortable roof is now changing.
Yes, again.
And then life is probably trying to show you a new chapter. Okay, yeah. You feel comfortable here? Let's move.
Now move,
chop,
yeah.
Chop, move.
You're too comfortable now. It's time to face some challenges again.
But yeah, and I wish all the best of luck for you for your next interview in Portugal.
Muchas and gracias.
Most likely, I'm going to see you in Lisbon next year.
Yes, please come.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep doing the meditation sessions there.
Yeah, that is the idea. And now we have registered website with ORZ.
Yes.
And it was one of the friends who suggested you should open an organization in Portugal. And apparently it's something you can do in collaboration with the government,
mm-hmm.
and where young people can come and work. It's something that I'm still learning what it is. And then we need like a website, a place that the government will provide. And we need to have activities and people can come and use the place like to sell the products that they make themselves. So it's like, I don't know, they are supporting themselves economically as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something like that. And now finally the website is registered ORZ and new programs are happening. I'm really, really glad that this is moving and it's doing its thing. And yeah, let's see. We have to do some nice programs in Portugal.
Yeah,
for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I will be there so I can start moving things there.
Let's see how it will go.
Yeah. Let's
so
see
far
if I
in Estonia, it was okay. And luckily we got this a place for free with Hector Container Hotel, and really happy and thankful for them. Anyways, do you like to share like final words? Would you share some final words for anyone who may be listening now or in future? I don't know, two centuries later.
Just to thank you, because it's been such an amazing journey for me, and you are so generous with your knowledge. I feel I've learned so much, and it helped me to be more centered and to know myself better, which I think is invaluable. So, muito obrigada.
Now we are speaking Portuguese. Yes.
Oh, thanks a lot. And yeah, it's hard to put in words how much I've learned, but I'm extremely grateful for all the knowledge you have passed. And I know I still need to learn so much, but from these 2 years, it's been really one of the most valuable things I take from this time in Estonia.
No, thank you very much as well. It's really nice knowing you and finding a sort of friendship that is like lasting longer. And I've definitely learned a lot with your companions, with other friends here, and made me feel more home than otherwise I'd just be with myself all the time.
Same.
But we learned a lot together in the meditation sessions also. So it's not that I'm sharing. I really don't know. Like, that's the authentic truth, that I don't know. And each time I sit for meditation, something shows up, and then I'm simply spontaneously sharing that. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I do.
I think you're very humble, but but I do appreciate a lot, because yeah, I think it's so important to work on our mind. You know, we like clean our apartments, we clean our clothes, but we don't clean our mind as much as we should, especially in the West. I think it's kind of forgotten, or it seems something kind of out there or mystic or something difficult to reach. But I think it's the basis of everything, of how you experience life and how you experience other people and whatever happens to you. So I think it's amazing what you're doing, because you can really change.
It gives me solace and peace as well, because I myself can practice meditation like that. But I'm going to take your word for this, and probably I'll repeat it. We clean our clothes, we clean our apartment, and we should also somehow clean our mind.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing. I will take this. So, muchas gracias, hermanita, para estar conmigo.
Gracias a ti.
Para este podcast. La última sección, como bye-bye, estamos hablando en español.
Una mezcla. A mix. Sí.
Pero sí, muchas gracias.
Gracias. Thank gracias you. Also for inviting me. I feel super honored to be here talking to you.
Thank you so much. And we would also like to thank Otto Farm, a very talented filmmaker. And he's the one helping us record this thing. And would you wave your hand for us, even though nobody can see? He's smiling in the control room. Thank you very much. Aitasula. Thank you very much for listening to the Chinnamosta podcast, a section of Mindful Maya podcast. And we will see you soon. And I would like to have you another time in the session someday in the future.
Hopefully in Portugal.
Hopefully in Portugal. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Chinnamosta Conversations, a part of the Mindful Maya podcast, where we listen and share your stories. You can find us on social media as Maya Satsang. Please leave us your thoughts on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, as it will help us grow and take your stories to where they need to be heard. We appreciate your support and look forward to hearing from you.